Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Negotiation, and on today's show, we are joined once again by Jacob Cook, co-founder and CEO of WPIC Marketing and Technologies. Jacob walks us through the key insights from WPIC's latest data report profiling the fastest growing consumer segments in China's e-commerce market. Drawing from GMV data across Tmall, JD.com, and Douyin, the report reveals a story of recovery, consumer optimism, and evolving channel strategies. Jacob kicks off with an overview of China's current consumption environment, highlighting a return of consumer confidence fueled by government stimulus, higher disposable incomes, and a willingness to spend. He then breaks down performance across platforms, noting the rapid rise of Douyin and Xiaohongshu, and explaining how brands should adapt to a more fragmented omnichannel landscape. We then dive into category-specific insights, from the booming beauty and fashion sectors to the rise of experiential consumption, pet care premiumization, and the ongoing expansion of health and wellness products. Jacob also discusses growth in outdoor and active lifestyle categories, with cycling, hiking, and ski gear seeing impressive gains. Stay tuned for an insight-packed discussion that challenges the doom and gloom narrative and positions China as a dynamic and essential market for global brands. Enjoy.
Well, Tmall and Jingdong are critical for sustained sales, but Douyin is really vital for that KOL-driven engagement and live stream shopping capability. So being able to launch a brand on those three platforms and using Douyin for your sort of quick sugar fixes with your influencers, being able to do, you know, $3, $4, $5 million even in a single day is great, but the margins aren't as good as we all know, like they are with Tmall and Jingdong. So there's a salad bowl kind of approach here where you're mixing the three together in various levels. And if you're after really, really fast growth, top line growth, then you really, you know, Douyin's going to be a bigger part of that program. And if you're focused on margin and sort of long-term, more stable growth, then Tmall is really going to be at the center of that approach.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation. Brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies.
Jacob, welcome back to the Negotiation Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Glad to be back again.
Okay, so where are you in the world today that we're recording you from?
I am out in the public area of our Hangzhou office. I got here this morning and there was a meeting going on in my office, so here I am. Might see people walking behind me in the background, but
nice.
Yeah, Hangzhou.
How would you characterize the current consumer environment in China? And are we seeing consumer confidence recovering? And what's driving this?
Yeah, we've seen consumer confidence really recovering since Q4 of last year. And that's carried on into this year. Chinese New Year, a little bit extended this year. So you're not going to see great January, February growth, but March was good as well. And that's, you know, backed up by not just what we're seeing, but, you know, reports out of Deutsche Bank too, for example, and are showing much higher confidence about the economy, family income growth. And, you know, our report that we're releasing too, you know, found a ton of categories such as beauty, fashion, you know, supplements, outdoor, and a couple others, including like more of the premium price brands that are doing pretty well. And that to us is also, you know, reflecting consumer optimism. We really like to see that price band going up, where people are spending a little bit more on quality, more premium products in those same categories, as opposed to, you know, seeing deflationary prices. So we're feeling pretty good about that. Still, I think, you know, China is going to be a very critical pillar for growth, especially, you know, in an unstable international market.
Tell us a little bit about the report and actually why you're releasing it.
Okay. Well, this isn't the first one we've done. And the last one that we did, you know, really, I think was read really well received across the industry. So the report's going to look at GMV across data from Tmall, Jingdong, and Douyin from 22 to 24. And it's going to really emphasize a lot of trends that we're seeing in consumer categories. We used our Descripto data engine, which is a distributed script engine, which is gathering tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of data points throughout the year. now that we're doing it. The three platforms that we focused on are roughly, 75% of all online spend in China. You know, there's a couple others we've talked about in previous podcasts, like Redbook, that we kind of see it up and coming. But for the years that we're looking at, we've got a very good representation of the market at that point. So, I think there's a lot of narrative out there about, slowing consumption. And, for us and Deutsche Bank and the other financial institutions that operate here, we really haven't seen that. In fact, we've seen quite the opposite. We're not at those, 30% online growth levels of the previous years, but we're still seeing very strong growth. And a lot of that, stimulus that's been announced too, I think it's just going to contribute to having a really good 2025.
The report emphasized the shift towards Douyin and social commerce, but also emphasizes the continued importance of Tmall. How should international brands be adjusting their strategies given this platform shift?
Well, Tmall and Jingdong are critical for sustained sales, but Douyin, is really vital for that KOL-driven engagement and live stream shopping capability. So being able to launch a brand on those three platforms and using Douyin, for your sort of quick sugar fixes with your influencers, being able to do, $3, $4, $5 million even in a single day is great, but the margins aren't as good as we all know, like they are with Tmall and Jingdong. So there's a salad bowl kind of approach here where you're mixing the three together in various levels. And if you're after really, really fast growth, then top line growth, and you really, Douyin's going to be a bigger part of that program. And if you're focused on margin and sort of long-term, more stable growth, and Tmall, is really going to be at the center of that approach. But it's really omni-channel now. And again, we've talked about, potentially putting Redbook into that mix too as well, which we're doing quite a bit. So, it's really not a one horse race anymore here at all.
Okay. So adding to the salad, as you mentioned, Xiaohong Shu, you noted in the report, it's poised for triple digit growth this year. What role do you see it playing in brand strategies compared to the Tmall, JD, and Douyin?
Well, we always like being a first adopter, right? Because once you have less brands on the platform in those early years, the advertising is less, the less people bidding on influencers, the less people bidding on the keywords. We're expecting Xiaohong Shu this year to surpass 100 billion in GMV. It's been so important in discovery, as a content platform for so long. And they've really, like, as we mentioned before, gone out and hired just a ton of people from the big platforms and trying to roll out that e-commerce execution. It's not going to be without its hiccups, of course, but, Xiaohong Shu has already been a part of the marketing mix. So it's not too hard to see how, as opposed to leaving an app to another app, which is never a great experience, how we're going to be able to actually do those transactions. And they're a lot more flexible also from a delivery and fulfillment. So it's great for the brands.
Let's get into some verticals, starting off with something that has been extremely strong for quite some time. We've talked about it quite a bit, the beauty and fashion. So what are we seeing in those categories?
Well, we're seeing the beauty market up 3.7% to now a total of $81 billion. And that's driven a lot by science-backed skincare. What we've seen in China, which is more so than any other market, is such an expert level of knowledge about the products from the consumers. It's no longer just about big brands. It's really about even potentially a lot of smaller brands that have joined the market, but have really good technology. So you've seen a lot of exoduses from L'Oreal, not only from a consumer, but from a scientific point of view, where these startups have really popped up all over the world. And they're finding a really good home in China. And if you look at a lot of those brands that, are under, say, $100 million annually, you're seeing a lot of them with like 20, 30, 40% of their actual global sales happening in China, which is an absolute overrepresentation. But it goes to show you, one, how knowledgeable the influencers are, especially about skincare, but two, how well the consumers are following that advice and how much effort and time they're putting into it. If you want to get advice, on a great skincare routine, there's going to be so much more quality information on Xiaohong Shu than any other platform, including the English language platforms globally, that really allows us to get a great insight into how the consumer is thinking about, beauty and skincare.
Suitcases have emerged as a significant subcategory. Is this growth purely related to the return of travel post-pandemic, or are other consumer lifestyle trends playing a role here?
Yeah, that's right. Suitcase market, it was up big. It's now over 2 billion, 2.1 billion US, which is a 27% increase. This was a big highlight of the report. You know, obviously the post-pandemic travel rebound is a big part of this. You know, we saw those domestic numbers really accelerate, but it took years to really get the international capacity for flights, the embassies to process visas. That backlog now seems to be kind of finished and done with. So we're expecting these numbers to get way, way, way back up. Yeah. And we're seeing it. You know, it's about, we talked about this a couple times before, those quality experiences, spending money on self-expression and things like travel. You know, we're calling this experiential consumption inside the report, but you can also see it with the influencers, you know, who are significantly boosting suitcase sales, you know, and driving a lot of those impulse buying. So there's tons of great content about travel, and the influencers have figured out, you know, how to monetize that with things like suitcase purchases.
Now, health and wellness, those supplements are continuing to surge with fish oil, vitamin B, dietary fiber among the key drivers. Why are supplements resonating with Chinese consumers right now?
Well, that category has been hot for a while. Our report dictates that it's now reached 17.6 billion US dollars. And that is really driven, driven really by heightened awareness. You know, and proactive wellness management, you know, rising interest in targeted supplements like fish oil, vitamin B, dietary, like you mentioned, you know, reflects increased knowledge. Like, it's a very knowledgeable consumer here. So people are focused on taking better care of themselves. And you can see it, you know, patterns all over consumption, you know, alcohol sales. It's not just in China, but way down in younger generations. You know, they're going to gyms more. They're traveling more. They're taking much better care of themselves than the older generation did. So a lot to be optimistic about there too, you know, and again, Douyin playing a big role and with a lot of short form video and Tmall as well, you know, with their influencers.
We know, and anybody who's listened to this should know by now, that there's been an explosive growth in sports and outdoor goods, right? We've had Justin Downs on the podcast recently. We've been talking about the ski domes, and it's such an area with huge potential for growth, mostly because how nascent this, I don't know, this these equipments and goods and whatnot, this lifestyle had been until very recently. And obviously the Olympics coming to China repeatedly have probably helped this quite a bit too. But that growth, notably cycling apparel and equipment, hiking footwear and ski gear. Tell us a little bit about that explosive growth.
Yeah, well, cycling apparel and equipment, 747 million US dollars. And that is 54% growth, you know, and that's again, driven by Douyin, trans-promoting active sporty lifestyles. You know, if you think about it, you know, cycling has really been dominant transportation for decades, especially in urban China. But now people are making cycling more of an effective lifestyle. They're buying cool bikes, you know, foldable bikes, taking up, you know, road cycling and mountain biking, you know, as forms of expression and leisure rather than, you know, primary transportation. Yeah, it, you know, skiing is another one. That was up 22% in our report, 432 million now. And that's bolstered by, you know, that ski culture, you know, the ski domes, the facilities. You know, Justin had a great podcast on that, you know, and keep going. Outdoor jackets, 49%, you know, 2.7 billion now. And that's fueled by both, you know, technical outdoor usage, but also people just wanting to wear these clothes for fashion.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, I'll tell you, my son, because I make him get his own way to school. Now he's in grade 8. He takes an e-bike to school. I got that e-bike off Temu. And it has been a phenomenal bike. It has worked brilliantly. Kid put it together himself too. So I'm telling you, yeah, don't sleep on that. What's going on in the pet market?
Yeah. Well, this has been going on for a while. That's up to 11.2 for pet products now, which is,
jeez.
I know. You know, pet ownership, especially among young urban consumers. You know, premiumization here is key. You know, it's really sort of strong demand now for high quality pet nutrition, grooming products and pet vitamins, which is something that we saw start in the States. We could almost have guaranteed that was going to catch on here, and it has now too. And again, you know, Douyin is really helping with this, becoming a key platform for, you know, innovative pet care solutions.
Despite the declining birth rates, what is driving parents to spend more in this category, and how is Douyin shaping consumer behavior there?
Well, I think anybody who's had a newborn in the last couple of years, you know, it the overall market is just so many more options to spend just an absolute ton of money on those kids, from, you know, $20,000 prams to you name it. There's a plethora of products on the market. But yeah, that sector actually grew 16% to $26 billion. And we always kind of joked because it's still higher than the pet category, but those two numbers were going to converge at some point. But there was really good growth in that sector last year, which is good for a whole number of categories. But it was a good birth year. As you know, birth rates can fluctuate, less so nowadays, but they have in the past based on the Chinese zodiac. But, you know, there's higher disposable incomes, increased health awareness among parents. You know, those trends are strong, and they're contributing to contribute to growth, even though the overall declining birth rate has been there. But to see 16% growth, I think those are some of the more surprising numbers when you look at sort of macroeconomic, like we talk about, you know, declining birth rates and things like that. But that's really driven, again, influencers being important, but those premium products, you know, are really highly sought after. And, you know, the people that are having kids are willing to invest, not only in those products that are, you know, there's some, you know, showiness to them, but also that, you know, enhanced child development and well-being.
Okay, so any other last high-level takeaways or synopsis, foreword, postword, that you want to say about this?
Well, I think where we're at right now, you know, coming into, you know, Q2 2025, we saw a really overall good growth in Q1. You know, January and February, pretty measured growth just because of the way the Chinese New Year hit this year. But March was really strong. We're expecting April to be way up over last year as well. And, you know, we just want to emphasize, I think that, you know, despite what the media is saying, you know, we're on the ground, we're publishing data the way it is, you know, calling balls and strikes, which we have been for years. But, you know, China and the other markets in Asia that we operate, but, you know, China specifically, really when looking at the data and given sort of global uncertainty, I mean, you know, this is going to be an important pillar of growth, I think, for a lot of brands for a long time. There's a ton of innovation coming out of this market. There's a lot of money. There's still a long way to grow. And, you know, success, it's really an online driven strategy with less and less, you know, focus on offline sales as everybody is seeing, and making sure that you've got a good omni-channel approach to how you're executing here. Because, you know, going through those numbers over the years, they go up, they go down based on platforms, but in aggregate, everything's headed up, and casting that wide net, you know, is really the pattern to success. But, you know, it's a dynamic landscape. It's very competitive, yet there's, you know, really good growth opportunities here that for brands that can, you know, adapt effectively and take in the data and realize that they've got a good fit here.
Jacob Cook, CEO of WPSE Marketing Technologies, thanks very much for coming on the show. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Okay, don't forget to check us out on the YouTube channel, WPIC's YouTube channel. You can go and find that. If you need your eyes and hands for other things, feel free to download and listen to our podcast on any of your favorite podcast platforms. Feel free to like, subscribe, maybe give us a review, some 5 stars. Really helps feed those algorithm monsters that help this kind of show get in front of other listeners. And if you want to give us any feedback, advice, or any guest recommendations, reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co. From me, from Jacob, and from everybody at the negotiation team, thanks very much for listening and or watching, and we'll see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.